From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and soundbites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
And what we're hearing, of course, Martha, is that people are terrified by what has happened with some of these Venezuelan gangs.
Senator Vance, I'm going to stop you because I know exactly what happened. Martha. I'm going to stop you. The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns. A handful of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border.
That was Republican vice presidential candidate Senator J.D. Vance sparring with ABC's Martha Raddatz on Sunday. The legacy media's attempt to dismiss and cover over the immigration-fueled crises in this country are only serving to draw more attention to the problems. Welcome to Washington Watch. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Well, migrant gangs are not just problems for Aurora, Colorado. Middle school students in Houston are being recruited by the Venezuelan gang Trinde Aragua. The gang is also operating with minors as young as 11 in New York City who are seeking asylum here in the U.S. We'll get more details from Arizona Congressman Andy Biggs, who serves on the House Governmental Oversight and Accountability Committee. One aspect of the Biden-Harris administration's facilitation of illegal immigration that has not gotten a lot of attention is its impact upon public education. Now, due to the 1982 Supreme Court decision, Plyler versus Doe, children in the country illegally have a right to attend publicly funded schools. Now, consider this. With an estimated 750,000 to 1 million undocumented minors in public education and the national average cost of $15,600 per student per year for education largely funded by local governments, some states are preparing to challenge the precedent and push for a new review by the Supreme Court. Today, we'll explore this pressing issue with Andrew Arthur, a resident fellow in law and policy at the Center for Immigration Studies. We'll also take a look at the South Dakota ballot initiative that would put abortion into the state constitution. Over the next several days, we're going to be taking a look at the 10 states that have abortion measures being pushed by the pro-abortion crowd on state ballot initiatives. We're going to be talking about that later. And in international news, according to the Washington Post, two unidentified sources in the Biden administration have said Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has agreed not to strike oil production facilities or Iran's nuclear program in Israel's retaliatory strike against Iran for their October 1st ballistic missile attack on Israel. But that is not exactly what Israelis are saying.
Of course, we listen to the opinions of the United States, but in the ultimate analysis, we'll make our own final decisions based on our own national interest. That's always been the case. It's the case with any country which takes the security of its citizens safely, and that continues to be the case now.
That was Israeli government spokesman David Mincer. We'll get the latest from Israel when we're joined by Real Life Network news director Daniel Cohen from Israel. All right, folks, it's election time. Pray, vote, stand. But you need to get your election resources so you can cast an informed vote, including we've got resources for you, including a personalized voter guide. To get it, text the word guide, G-U-I-D-E, to 67742. That's 67742, the word guide, and it will take you to all of the election resources that we have available for you. Again, that's guide to 67742. Reports continue to emerge regarding gang activity throughout the country, fueled by the Biden-Harris administration's border crisis and the millions of unvetted migrants that they have allowed into the country. While the left and the legacy media continues to downplay the effects of the Biden-Harris administration's wide-open southern border, local communities continue to pay the price for such policies. Will there be accountability? How bad does this have to get? Joining me now to discuss this, Congressman Andy Biggs. He serves on the House Judiciary Committee and the House Oversight and Accountability Committee. He represents the 5th Congressional District of Arizona. Congressman Biggs, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony. Good to be with you.
You were one of the early voices tracking this because you are in a border state, but you have been tracking the Biden-Harris administration's border policies and its effects that it's had on local communities. Has it reached a boiling point? Has it reached a point that the legacy media's attempts to cover it up won't work anymore?
Yes, I think it has, and I'll tell you why. You mentioned the trend, the Aragua gang. You've mentioned it's taking place in Colorado, Texas, New York City, also in Chicago. They've had tremendous inroads, successful inroads in Chicago. So all of people are seeing that very dangerous gang but emerge as a real criminal organization. But you're also seeing that crime is going up everywhere else in the country as a result of this influx of illegal immigration. So, I mean, think about it. There's probably not a day that goes by that you're not seeing a murder, multiple rapes, etc. And they've released these people into the country, literally millions of people, and of those millions, hundreds of thousands of them are criminals.
What's shocking about this that is now coming to light, Congressman Biggs, is that they're recruiting minors. They're exploiting our lax judicial system, our criminal justice system. These are migrant student young people that have come to this country that are here in funded, city-funded, government-funded shelters. And they're in New York in particular, there's that's been reported on as a gang. They have committed there's 21 in this particular gang that has been associated with 50 different criminal events. Not a single one of them have been arrested because they're minors.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And never mistake this, that the cartels and gangs, they all understand how American law works. They are expert at this. So they understand that in New York, for instance, that you have lenient prosecutions. So the police officers are making the arrest, but the prosecutors are letting them out. They're not making the charges ultimately. So they know, they started off, they were just doing some snatches in the parks and stuff, but then it escalated. They started doing some strong arm robberies, and now they're brandishing weapons, and they're being so bold about it as to show videos on social media of what they're doing. Same thing in Aurora, Colorado. And Tony, they understand very clearly that the prosecutors are not going to prosecute. So that provides an additional incentive to go ahead and commit these crimes. Now, let's just face it, if the border was secure, they wouldn't be here in the first place.
Right.
But they are here, and those people who are here that should be charging them are failing at that level.
Again, referring to media sources out of New York, they're actually communicating with one another. They're having these chat apps that they're using, but they're doing it on their government-funded cell phones that have been given to them as they come into the country. I mean, at some point, Congressman Andy Biggs, Americans have to wake up and realize this is insanity. We're funding people who come into this country illegally to terrorize American citizens.
That's exactly right, Tony. I mean, so they're given phones, they're given housing, they're given medical care. We transport them. We are the logistics arm of the cartels. So when the cartels, pre-Biden, if a cartel had been contracted to bring somebody and smuggle them into the country, they actually had to get them to the location. That doesn't happen anymore. They just have to get them to the border, because if you get them to the border, this administration will grant them parole status, and which will give them quasi-legal status, and we will transport them wherever they want to go in the country.
So the Biden-Harris administration is in partnership with the cartels?
A tacit partnership, exactly right. And that's what's really disgusting, but the fact that they're violating the law every time they grant a parole status because they're doing that on a collective basis, and that law was meant to provide on a singular case-by-case unique basis, and they're doing this. And Tony, you and I aren't even talking today about the CBP One app. We're not talking about the hundreds of thousands that are coming through just from four countries that have massive problems. We're talking Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. And that's how these gang members get in, by the way. We're finding that out. The terrorist who wanted to assassinate and have an election day massacre, he was let in, contrary to what the Justice Department said, which was that he was let in on a special immigrant visa. No, he came in, and we gave him a parole status, and he was able to go where he wanted to go because we took him there. And that's what's going on with this administration.
Now, you represent an area in Arizona that has been particularly hit hard by this border crisis. Of course, we now know that this is not limited to the border states. Every state is a border state. But what are you hearing from your constituents? How big of an issue do you think this is going to be in just a couple of weeks when voters go to the polls?
Well, in Arizona, it is you have one and 1A, and one is the border, and 1A is the high cost and inflation and the economic distress that so many people find themselves in. But in a way, they're related, are they not? Yeah. I mean, because we are providing all of these bennies to illegal aliens, but we're leaving the American people to struggle along with the economy. So the border is a huge issue in Arizona. And as I've gone around the country, I'll tell you, it is a huge issue everywhere. Everywhere that I go to and I'm talking to people, they're telling me that the border's got to be secured. They want that border secured more than they want the costs coming down. They want them both, but they understand the detriment and the danger to our sovereignty and to our safety that just wide open borders present.
Well, and you're right, they're connecting the dots between the cost and open border. I mean, even the issue of immigration has worked its way into disaster relief. Now it has FEMA on their heels trying to say, oh, no, we didn't shift money around. It was other money that we had. But when over $1 billion has come from FEMA funds to resettle migrants into this country, but yet now they're crying Congress has to come back because we're out of money to help Americans, I think the average American can realize we've got a problem.
Look, Tony, I brought that up. I've known about that for more than 3 years because when you're dealing with the border crisis, I would ask them, where are they getting the money? Where are these NGOs getting the money that are actually in some instances providing assistance to CBP and moving people? Because CBP doesn't have enough resources to do that. I was told repeatedly, it's coming from FEMA. And so we've known about this for quite some time. But the magnitude of these recent storms and FEMA's failure to respond is this, by the way, that's not a resource shortage. That is incompetence and failure on the part of FEMA. But they finally have had to come clean that they've been providing this money as part of the encampments, the transportation, everything else that's going on with the illegal immigration and the movement and the logistics arms that you and I were just talking about.
Yeah, it's clear across the board in many agencies, it's not a lack of resources, it is competency. DEI has taken over this administration. Congressman Andy Biggs, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Tony.
All right, folks, after the break, I'll review how the border crisis has affected local school districts and is costing taxpayers. That's next. Don't go away.
We humbly, Father, bow before you in these moments that we have together, that this wouldn't just be any other conference, but that literally, Lord, you would reset our hearts to be in alignment with your word, that you would reset the city of Washington, D.C. to be in realignment with your word.
There's no politician, including Trump, that can affect the soul of this nation. You're the only one. The answer's not in the State House, and it's not going to be in the White House. It's got to be in your own house. It's got to be in the Church of God. It's got to be in His house.
Our principles never bend to politicians.
Yes.
Our principles never bend to politicians. By God's grace, it will be the other way around. Politicians will bend to our biblically based child protective principles.
No matter what comes in November, no matter if it doesn't go the way you want or I want or the things we prayed for, our focus and priorities do not change as Christians. We fight against evil. We stand for truth. We tell people the good news of Jesus Christ. We tell them the truth.
So let's not be discouraged. Don't lose heart. Don't lose the faith. Stand now strong, because the Lord has given us the great privilege of living in a time when our choices matter, when our lives matter, when our courage matters. So let's stand together and save this great country. God bless the United States of America.
There are 40 million self-described evangelical Christians who do not vote in a presidential election. If half of those people who sit in church on their blessed assurance would pray, stand, and vote, we would change every election in this country from the school board all the way to the White House.
All it takes, friends, is one generation for us to lose what is valuable, important, and sacred. Every generation has the opportunity to preserve what is right, what is godly, what is good about the United States of America, or to shirk our responsibilities and to watch what happens in just one generation in our country.
This may not be an easy task, but we are living in a moment of challenge, but also of great opportunity. And we know always that we are not alone, that His Spirit empowers us and protects us, and that He can do the unimaginable. Dobbs, after all, was never supposed to happen.
Father, we thank You. You have entrusted us with this moment in history, and I pray that we would be found faithful, and that as a result of our faithfulness to You, that thousands, millions would come into the kingdom as they would experience the forgiveness of sin and the new life that is found only in Jesus Christ. Amen. Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. Be sure and get your election resources. Election resources. Text GUIDE to 67742. That's GUIDE, G-U-I-D-E, to 67742. And you can get a personalized voter guide, among other items, there for you. They're all there for you to help you cast an informed ballot. All right, as we continue to examine the impact of the Biden-Harris administration's border crisis, an often overlooked casualty of their open border policy is how the influx of migrants have overwhelmed many local school districts. Now, earlier this month, Reuters reported that more than 500,000 school-age migrant children have arrived in the U.S. since 2022. And according to a 2023 study, taxpayers in Texas alone spend more than $7 billion annually on education for illegal migrants, leading an already struggling school districts to deal with the federal government's problems. And these are low estimates. It could be over 1 million of these students that are in the country. And with a national average of over $15,000 per student, local governments are saying, hey, wait a minute, enough of this. So joining me now to discuss this is Andrew Arthur. He is the resident fellow in law and policy at the Center for Immigration Studies, who recently released a study on this particular issue. Andrew, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
So, Andrew, walk us through the numbers on migrant children now in our education system and what this is costing taxpayers. And, you know, a lot of people think the federal government pays a lot of education. They pay just a fraction. This is coming out of the pockets of local communities.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Reuters report was based upon a report that was purportedly done by Syracuse University, which generally is the transactional access or transactional records access clearinghouse at Syracuse or TRAC. But I couldn't find it, so I went back and I looked at the numbers myself. We're talking about more than 300,000 unaccompanied alien children who have been released to sponsors in the United States. And then, you know, we are potentially talking about another 700,000 children that came with parents in what we call family units, which is why, you know, in the estimate that I did, I said that the actual number is somewhere between 700,000 and 1 million brand new migrant children who have entered the United States since 2022, just over the southwest border. So we're talking about a huge number of people. Nearly all of those children speak some other language than English. In fact, it's doubtful that many of them have any fluency in English at all. Most of them have suffered from poor levels of education prior to the point that they've gotten to the United States. Now they're flowing into our public school system. And you mentioned the number. It's about an average of $15,000 per pupil. And when you talk about English as a second language learners, you can add about 20% to that, or $3,000, for a total of $18,000 per student. And as you mentioned before, Washington doesn't really pay much of the funding for the public schools in the United States at all. Most of that funding comes from ad valorem taxes, property taxes, that all of us who own property in the United States pay. We know that about $800 billion in local tax money is paid for public schools nationwide annually, and that equals out to about the $800 billion in property taxes that localities receive. Now, again, some of those school districts receive state money, but, nearly all of the costs of these migrant children are being foisted by Washington onto the states and localities.
So a couple questions, Andrew. First off, they're required to take these students based upon this 1982 Supreme Court decision, which is why some states are preparing to try to challenge that court decision because of the vast volume of minors, illegal minors that have come into this country. Now, in your piece, you kind of put this into context because we're talking about if we're upwards of a million. Help people grasp how significant of a volume that is when we consider the number of kids in public education.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a huge number of kids, especially given the two factors that I mentioned before. One, most of them don't speak English when they come here, which means that these schools have to hire English as a second language learners. They have to, find textbooks that are in these kids' languages. They have to make special accommodations for these children, and they have to expand their physical plan just so that there are, desks for these kids to sit at. And, then when you consider the fact that most of these kids, haven't had the benefits of a good education up to this point, there's a lot of remedial education, Tony, that takes place trying to mainstream these students into the system. Now, you and I both know public school teachers and public school administrators. They're going to move heaven and earth for any kid that they get. But these kids are going to require a lot of special accommodations, which means that there's going to be less time paid to, legal resident kids who speak English and United States citizen kids who have been raised in the language. So, yeah, I mean, all across the board, this is a significant impediment that we're placing on our schools and on our school children. And it's one that, Washington, D.C., that the Biden administration seems to be blithely uninterested in addressing.
Schools base their budgets. They look at kind of what they need to do in terms of expanding based upon what's in the pipeline. And they've got a few years to prepare for that when you consider the growth of a community. But when you've got this volume coming in, there's no way to prepare and plan for that.
Yeah, no. And, I've been an expert witness in one case where we've talked about those school costs. And planning is generally done a year, 2 years, 5 years into the future. You'll notice, every now and again, your locality raises property taxes, because they know that they're going to, have those additional costs. There's no way for school districts in this country to anticipate that next year they're going to get another 200 migrant children, because the Biden administration really isn't very forthcoming about telling us how many kids are coming and doesn't do anything at all to accommodate them right where they land.
And so, they just drop them onto that school district. And I think as with the growing concern about the impact of illegal immigration, very few communities are going to approve additional property taxes to fund education. This is going to be a crisis. This is a crisis in the making. Andrew, sorry we're out of time, but I appreciate your work on this, and I'm sure we're going to have another conversation at a later date as we continue to track this. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Tony.
All right, folks, we're going to continue Washington Watch after the break. We're going to take a look at another state that has abortion on the ballot coming up on November the 5th. We're going to talk to one of the leading voices in South Dakota.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Be sure and get your election resources. We've got a voter toolkit available for you. Text GUIDE to 67742, GUIDE to 67742. You can get your own voter guide and other resources. Text GUIDE to 67742. Let me ask you a question. Would you trust someone to tell you the truth who advocates for the taking the lives of unborn babies? If someone will take the life of an unborn child, they're going to lie to you as well. And what we have going on in 10 states where abortion is on the ballot in this November, and I say abortion, these are not life initiatives. These are abortion initiatives. This is being pushed by the abortion crowd, the death crowd. We talked about this yesterday, Missouri. I was there this past Sunday. At Sunday night, we had a big event at in Kansas City, Missouri, and it was a good event. We had Pastor Chris Williams on yesterday talking about this, and they're not the only state working it. There's several others, and what I want to do over the next several days is discuss each one of these ballot initiatives. South Dakota has become another one of these states where abortion activists have set their sights as they deceptively push Amendment G, a revision of the state's constitution that will allow abortion up until birth while removing health and safety measures for women. Join me now to explain the deceptive practices and what's being said to push the passage of Amendment G and why South Dakota voters must reject this amendment next month is Carolyn Woods, spokesperson for the Life Defense Fund. Carolyn, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks so much for having me on, Tony. I really appreciate it.
All right. So, Carolyn, tell our viewers and our listeners about Amendment G, what it would do.
Absolutely. Like you said, the first thing it does, it allows abortion through all 9 months. This is barbaric, it's inhumane, and it allows it for nearly any reason. So any abortion doctor can justify an abortion up till the moment of birth. Number two, like you said, it also rids health and safety protections. This means you don't have to be a doctor. It means you don't have to have wait times. It means you don't have to have parental consent, which leads to the third one. Parents don't get the right to know what is happening if their daughter is a minor and is getting an abortion. You actually have to, as a parent, you have to have a sign-off on whether your daughter or your son gets ibuprofen in school, and yet this amendment would allow them to not have to get sign-off on an abortion. So you don't get the right to know as a parent. And number four, no conscious protections for doctors or nurses. And then number five, it would lead to taxpayer-funded abortion. So this is a very barbaric, very extreme, and very radical amendment here in South Dakota.
And they're trying to say, oh, this is just restoring it to the way it was prior to the overturn of Roe in the Dobbs
yes.
decision. This goes way back. This goes back to 1973, where, as you pointed out, it's abortion until birth. And it opens the door, I would argue, to taxpayer funding of this as well if it becomes a
Absolutely.
Right in the Constitution.
Absolutely. And that's what's so barbaric and inhumane about this whole thing is they want you to pay for it. Once, you know, this in the state constitution, every single law on our books currently will be overridden, will be canceled. And so a lot of times they're saying, oh, this is the will of the people. No, they broke election law to get this on the ballot and they deceived voters saying it's a pro-life measure. It's a grocery tax measure. So they obviously use slimy tactics that are unlawful, which is why we actually have sued them and we're going to trial in December. We're going to hold them accountable no matter what if this thing passes or doesn't pass. And also, they also say, oh, this is just, you know, Roe v. Wade. It's just the same exact thing. Well, let me just tell you, no, it's not. When Roe v. Wade was land of the law here in South Dakota and across the United States, it was only up to 22 weeks, I'm sorry, and here in South Dakota, and most of the abortions were done before 15 weeks. So that's actually completely a lie. And they just continue to lie. They've continued to put this on the ballot and have lied to get it here in the first place. And they're continuing to tell people that, you know, we are the, you know, this is the will of the people. It's not the will of the people at all.
Well, again, if someone is going to take the life of an unborn child, they'll lie to you as well. So you cannot believe anything that they are saying. I want to ask you this question about the court case that was supposed to, they've postponed that until December. What happens if this somehow gets approved and then the court case comes up? Is the court case dismissed? What I mean, can you can't reverse a constitutional amendment, can you?
Sure. And no, that's a great question. You can't reverse a constitutional amendment. However, we are still going to hold them accountable no matter if this passes or doesn't pass. So even if it, let's say, passes, which Lord forbid it does here, and we're working very hard with Life Defense Fund here to have that not happen. But even if it did, no, we can go back to, we can still go to court, we can go to trial and say, hey, you still broke election law to get this on the ballot, and that's unacceptable. It's illegal, and you need to pay for your crimes.
So here's the best thing that the voters in South Dakota could do with that in mind is just vote this thing down.
And absolutely.
And vote against Amendment G, because it's been deceptive from the start, one. And two, and more importantly, this would enshrine in your state's constitution abortion. And you've been one of the most pro-life states in the country. This would be abhorrent for the state of South Dakota. Carolyn, out of time, I want to thank you for the work. How can people find out more about what you're doing in South Dakota?
Yes, absolutely. Go to lifedefensefund.com. We'd love for you to donate, help out, reach out to us. We're here stopping this thing. We have yard signs, even if people are stealing them and wreaking havoc on them. We are replenishing them. We are here for the fight, and we are here to protect women and children. And so we'd love for you to join our cause. And I really appreciate you having us on, Tony, to highlight this important Amendment G.
All right, Carolyn, thanks for joining us. And folks, go check out the website, Help If You Can. And pastors, preach on this. Challenge your folks to stand for life. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in him through his word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible Reading Plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in Him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible. And join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
The world is hurting. Streets are filled with crime. Families are broken, sin is celebrated, and God is mocked. Everywhere we look, the wages of our sin are on full display. As Christians, we know that surrender to God's will is the solution to our biggest problems, but not everyone agrees. Even in church, we hear people say the most important thing is to be tolerant, that we shouldn't impose a morality on other people, and that loving our neighbor means celebrating what they do. But you can't do that. It's not that you don't love your neighbor, you do. But you care about God's opinion more than your neighbor's opinion, and this makes you different. In fact, sometimes it makes you feel alone, like you're the only one. But there is good news. You are not alone, not even close. Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, go to frc.org/sagecon and take the quiz to find out. The world is hurting, and we have the solution. We can't do it alone, but we can do it if we work together. That's what we're working toward every day. Join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon. SageCon to learn more. That's SageCon. SageCon to learn more.
Welcome back to this Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Our word for today comes from 2 Chronicles chapter 28. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. And he did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord, as his father David had done. He burned incense in the valley of the son of Hinnom, and burned his children in the fire, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. Therefore, the Lord his God delivered him into the hand of the king of Syria. They defeated him and carried away a great multitude of them as captives. You know, when a leader rejects God's ways, the people suffer. If an entire nation suffered under a king they did not choose, how much more accountable are we who elect our leaders? Do you think God will not judge a nation that rejects his truth and his ways, selecting leaders who simply promise more free stuff and then replace truth with the same demonically driven practices that Ahaz pursued? It's why we need to pray, vote, and stand. For a personalized voter guide, text GUIDE to 67742. That's GUIDE to 67742. And to join us on our journey through the Bible, simply text the word Bible to 67742. Well, following Israeli airstrikes on Hezbollah targets in Lebanon overnight, the acting leader of Hezbollah delivered a televised message today saying the Iranian-backed terrorist group now seeks to retaliate deeper into Israeli territory in order to, quote, make the enemy feel pain, end quote. Meanwhile, the Israeli government has reportedly told the Biden-Harris administration that any response to Tehran's recent missile strike will avoid hitting Iran's nuclear enrichment and their oil production sites. What strategy could the Israeli military be pursuing, or could this be a head fake? Joining me now to discuss the latest from Israel is Daniel Cohen, news director for Real Life Network, just outside of Tel Aviv. Daniel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Always great to be with you, Tony, and hello to your audience. Hi, everyone.
Well, it's good to see you again. I know you were here in the States for the Pray Vote Stand Summit, and you're going to be coming back. I'll go ahead and break the news here on Washington Watch that you're going to be joining Pastor Jack Hibbs and myself with Real Life Network as we do election night coverage on election night. And so, folks, you can tune in either on the Real Life Network app or on the Stand Firm app and get a biblical analysis of the election results. So let's jump right into this, Daniel. What's changed since you got back to Israel after the Pray Vote Stand Summit?
Well, not a whole lot. There were some things that changed. There had been more attacks from Hezbollah. In fact, Yom Kippur, which was just celebrated on Friday, sundown, just hours into it. And Israel's the only place in the world that celebrates Yom Kippur where everything stops. Businesses stop. Children love it. It's their favorite day of the year because they take to the streets on bicycles. And I was riding with my youngest daughter, and there was a drone that struck literally just two blocks from my house. It was a senior living facility. It was a 99-year-old Holocaust survivor, the drone from Hezbollah. Apparently, they're made with fiber optics now, Tony, and we're hearing that Israel said that they were tracking it, but they're way harder to shoot down. And if that's the case, then Israel's going to have to moderate. But from Lebanon, I live just outside Tel Aviv, a solid hour and a half, 2 hours from the Lebanese border. So for a drone to infiltrate and to go that far, it was really a miracle, Tony, I should tell you. The building, it's called Bet Juliana, this senior living home, and they just had the windows of this facility wrapped with this new kind of an ultraviolet reflecting light, reflecting wrap, excuse me, not light, to reflect the light. And they credited this wrap because when the drone hit, and I've shared on my social media, you can see exactly where it hit. You see a huge hole covered by an Israeli flag in the building, but you can also see that the glass did not explode. It kind of it was held in place. And by the way, 99-year-olds, 90-something-year-olds on walkers, obviously with mobility issues. When the sirens sound, we have 90 seconds to 2 minutes to get to mamads, to get to bomb shelters in the basement. So I say it was a miracle that no one was hurt. But again, I just think it's God's hand of protection.
Yeah, actually, I think when I was in Tel Aviv on my last trip, I stopped there in that senior facility to listen to their choir sing those Holocaust survivors.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about this. According to reports, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his intelligence leaders have yet to determine a specific response for Iran, but they have told the Biden-Harris administration that they will not target the nuclear facility or oil production sites. What do we know?
Yeah, so that sounds like Prime Minister Netanyahu is moderating, right, on Iran. And why did he do that? Why would he do that? Well, that was in order to get the Biden White House to send Israel a very powerful missile defense system. We're not sure that Netanyahu communicated we don't know what he's shown in terms of what he's told the Biden administration. The White House has said the White House hasn't shown that it can be trusted. Right. And so is it possible that Israel says, OK, President Biden, we will agree not to attack Iran's oil and its nuclear facilities in exchange for this, exchange for this powerful weapons defense system? But a lot of people here in Israel are saying, why would Israel broadcast? Why would we say what we will or won't do? And the bigger question then is it a precursor to even something larger? Maybe they say, OK, in this initial strike, we won't. But, you know, I ask myself from an Israeli perspective, which is more important? Because we're 20 days, something right from just weeks out from an election, and everything has to be viewed through the political lens. Which is more important, ridding Iran of its nuclear capabilities if you're Israel, or is it not hurting the Democrats' chances of retaining the White House? The Biden and Harris administration, we know what their goal is. But it's pretty obvious that a nuclear Iran is a threat to Israel. They've said they want to wipe Israel off the map. It's a threat to the Middle East. And it's a threat to the entire world. So, you know, to be clear, if we think about it, if Biden wasn't willing to send missile defense to Israel unless Prime Minister Netanyahu agreed not to hit Iran's oil and nuclear sites because of Kamala's chances in the election, if you're standing back and reading the tea leaves and that's what it kind of sounds like, then I say if the United States is supposed to be Israel's strongest ally, is it? If it's putting these conditions on aid?
I want to play a clip from earlier today. It's late there in Israel, but earlier today, Israeli government spokesman David Mincer had this to say. Play clip number one, please.
Of course, We listen to the opinions of the United States, but in the ultimate analysis, we'll make our own final decisions based on our own national interest. That's always been the case. It's the case with any country which takes the security of its citizens safely, and that continues to be the case now.
That sounds more like Israel than the Washington Post anonymous sources.
Right. Yes, exactly, Tony. And by the way, shouldn't Israel be concerned about Israel and not placating and not worrying about meddling? Or, you know, Israel's aware. Prime Minister Netanyahu is aware that there's an election just days from now. But Israel has to do what's right for Israel. By the way, speaking of, it's not just the United States, the UN, Tony. The UN is making it more difficult for Israel to defeat Hezbollah in Lebanon. Have you, and I know your audience is up on this, but you know, they've been positioning their own, they're calling their peacekeeping forces in southern Lebanon, but they've been putting them in harm's way, where Israel is trying to operate, essentially think like human shields. And on Sunday, Prime Minister Netanyahu lost it. He told the Secretary General of the UN, remove the UNIFIL forces. This is exactly where the IDF is operating. The Israeli military found a Hezbollah a compound. It was stocked with weapons. It was motorcycles. This was underneath a home in a Lebanese border village, right on the Israel border. And there were terrorists there who were planning. This is the Radwan unit. They were planning a major attack on Israel, Israel believes. Defense Force spokesman, his name is the Rear Admiral, Chief Spokesman Daniel Hagari. And he showed this video. They showed the bunker just miles from the Israeli border. And there they had motorcycles. They had weapons. There was ammo. It was strewn across beds inside this underground facility. One of the walls had a large portrait of former, I emphasize former, Hezbollah commander Hassan Nasrallah, who was killed in an airstrike, recently by Israel. That amazing airstrike and the way that was orchestrated. So Israel very much has to take care of its own self and its own business. Unfortunately, I believe cannot completely trust the United States or the UN to be looking out for it right now.
This is very similar to what we saw in Gaza, where UNRWA, the United Yes. Nations relief organization that is operating down there, was a shield for Hamas. In fact, we know that there are people working for Hamas that were on the payroll of UNRWA. The UN is not only not helpful, but it appears to be clearly aiding the other side, the enemies of Israel.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, Israel is able to ping. This is why Hezbollah, this is why they don't want to carry cell phones. Israel can track the technology, the defense, the Mossad. They're incredible. But Israel ran, they did a cell phone ping from October 7th, and they found around a dozen UNRWA employees infiltrated and helped carry out the October 7th attack. Think about that, everybody. What Tony was just saying, UNRWA, these are people that are in place to try to help with aid, to try to help get food, water, flour, medicine, the necessities. And they, the UN organization that, by the way, the United States funds more than any other nation in the world, it's to the tune of billions, and I don't remember the number off the top of my head. But they were the ones, Israel tracked cell phones from at least 12, a dozen of them who infiltrated and were carrying out the October 7th violent, vicious, grotesque attack against women, children, babies, you know what happened. So yeah, that is that's grotesque, Tony. That is horrendous. It's awful. I mean, there's not a word strong enough. And again, and so Israel's accused of genocide. Israel, which was violently attacked, it makes up 0.4% of the Middle East. Did you know that Israel is 0.4% of the Middle East? Has never attacked any of its Arab neighbors. Has only responded. And when Israel takes out Hassan Nasrallah and all the henchmen beneath him in Hezbollah and these Hamas commanders, how do the terrorists respond? They respond by launching missiles and drones to try to kill Israeli civilians.
I want to ask you this question based upon something you said a moment ago. You know, we've got the elections here in the United States. That could dramatically shift the landscape in terms of the geopolitical landscape for Israel to respond to the threats, primarily that threat from Iran, but also deal with Hezbollah. The Democratic Party, as timid and unreliable as they are probably more supportive right now because they're going into an election. Is this not the time for Israel to deal with their enemies?
Well, I believe it is, Tony, but, you know, I'm not the one making the decisions. And a strike on the nuclear facilities of Iran, now seems like the moment. It seems like there's never been a better moment. I mean, and Israel would have every, you know, they all options on the table after at a direct strike earlier this year in April, and at a direct launch a few just a few weeks ago. All right, so now would be the moment, I believe, to do that. But it's everything is calculated at the moment. By the way, you know, the Biden administration has been saying privately to Iran that any assassination attempt, this is something that a lot of people have been talking about as well, against President Trump, would be considered an act of war. And when I heard that, I said to myself, why are they communicating that privately? Say it publicly. You know, President Trump has already said the United States should blow Iran's largest cities to smithereens if anything were to happen to him. They should be saying publicly right now, if you attack not even just President Trump, Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, there's a contract out, John Bolton. You know, Iran still wants revenge against President Trump for the 2000 drone strike that killed Qasem Soleimani. And Iran has been targeting. We know that there are cells in the United States. There were two assassination attempts thwarted. July 12th, there was a Pakistani national, I believe it was Asif Merchant, a 46-year-old, and he was detained by authorities. And then also, of course, there was the attempted assassination attempt. We're calling that West Palm Beach. It was thwarted early. This guy with the AK-47 at the golf course. But Iran hasn't made any secret its desire for retribution. And Khomeini has, you know, they've put together this video simulating a drone attack at Mar-a-Lago. Do you remember this? This was not long ago.
Right.
I wish President Biden and I wish our leaders would say, Democrat, Republican, Iran, if you so much as look at us the wrong, if you look at any leader here the wrong way, we will take, but that forceful language just doesn't come. It's all about placating. And it's all about not escalating, especially days before a game-changing election for our country.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That should be communicated very clearly to any of our enemies that would assassinate one of our leaders. Before we wrap up here, Daniel Cohen, good news. Some good news coming out of Israel today as they recognize kind of their top allies, those who stand with Israel in a time when we see what's happening on college campuses over here and we see the ambivalence of some of our leaders. Israel takes note of who's standing with them.
You better believe it. The number one friend of Israel, and this is something they've been doing for I don't know how long, but it's been a few years now that I've been monitoring. But just today, Israel recognized Franklin Graham, the son of Billy Graham, and the organization that he's president of, that he leads, Samaritan's Purse. The Good Samaritan. I mean, evangelicals, Christians, we have an opportunity right now to show the love of Jesus, of Yeshua, to the people here in Israel and Jewish people around the world. But just a few weeks ago, I went to the Gaza border for the Real Life Network, and I got to walk and talk and interview Franklin Graham, where they were dedicating two armored ambulances. And while he was there, they said for the people living on the Gaza border community that they would dedicate 20. They would do more. They were going to bring 20 more armored ambulances. And he even made a point. He said, think about, you know, you people here have looked evil in the face. You saw it on October 7th. And I wish we didn't have to have armored ambulances. But on October 7th, Hamas told the terrorists who were infiltrating, one of their commands was to take out, to destroy ambulances and to kill paramedics, to kill first responders. Why? So that they couldn't treat the wounded and that they couldn't treat the injured. And so the acknowledgement for Franklin Graham was wonderful. Mike Pompeo came in second. Mike Pompeo was number one last year. And so there's a long list. I won't go through them all, but kudos. I think the world of Sissy Graham Lynch, Franklin Graham, and Samaritan's Purse, and all these organizations that are really stepping up right now in Israel's time of need.
All right, Daniel Cohen, we're going to have to leave it there for tonight, but we look forward to seeing you on election night as we have an election
coast
night.
Coast to coast election coverage, Tony. We'll see you. That's right.
All right. Take care. Folks, thanks for joining us tonight. And I do encourage you to tune in for election night coverage as Daniel joins Pastor Jack and I. Until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.